We're on Daf Lamed Daled Amud Beis. We have two interpretations of Rabbi Yochanan Sandler, who says that the mezid, if you violate the Shabbos and you cook on Shabbos, the food is usur olamis, both for him and for everyone else, which means became a chepze di surah. The question is that the rice or is that the rabbanon? And it all depends on how you darsh in the pasuk. Rav Chiya had a drash on the pasuk, "Ushmartem es haShabbos ki kodeshi lachem," that the Shabbos is kodesh and also the Maisa Shabbos is kodesh. It's a ribui to include Maisa Shabbos. That's also Osir Bachila Midin Kodesh, and that's apparently a Doraisa Halacha. Hence, the violation of Shabbos generates an Isur Doraisa of Achila. And as we mentioned on Thursday, that only applies to certain Malachas, not for example to Hotzah, but to Malachas like Bishul, Afia, Shchita, where you actually effectuate a change in the object itself. However, the Gemara quotes a Bar Plukta, we don't know exactly who it is, it's either Rav Acha or Ravina, that Maisa Shabbos, even according to Rabbi Yochanan Sandler, is only Derabbanan, which means that we have a different drasha, a different way of interpreting this pasuk. When it says Kodesh He, it means that the Shabbos itself is Kodesh, but Maisa Shabbos is not Kodesh. So that's where we got up to at the end of last week. And now we're gonna start with Ulaman di Omar. So let's just see if we can count this up. I guess here we have a tosis on the left side of the page, Hamavashal b'Shabbos. So if you go about three lines below that tosis, Hamavashal b'Shabbos, the first word in the line is Maseha Kodesh. It should be about, I would say, 14, 15 lines up from the bottom of the page. Ulamadi Omar Dirabonon. Now, we have to go back to the drawing board. We had a Braisa, which recorded a Machlok stream Rabbi Meir and Chachomim about a Ganav who shechts the animal on Shabbos. And does he pay Tashlume Arba V'chamisha? Now the premise is that the Ganav sent, he appointed a shliach to do the shchita. So the shliach is going to be chayav misa for shechting on Shabbos. What about the Ganav himself? Does he incur a chiyuv of dalet v'hei? According to Rabbi Meir, yes. And according to Rabbanan, no. Now we assumed until now that the reason why, according to the Chachamim, there's no chiyuv of dalet v'hei is because the Chachamim accept two shitos. Number one, the shita of Rabbi Shimon, that shchita shein aruya lav shmei shchita. And number two, the shita of Rabbi Yochanan Asanlar, that Maisa Shabbos is awesome. Hence, it becomes a shchita shein aruya and it cannot generate a chiyuv of dalet v'hei. However, if we're assuming, according to one man di Omar, that Rabbi Yochanan Asanlu is talking about a derabbanon, which means that on a deraisa level there's no iser of Maisa Shabbos, it means the shchita is a shchita ruuya, as far as the Torah is concerned. So what would generate a ptur tashlumin if we assume that the shchita is a shchita ruuya in a Torah? And the Achronim here, the Shita Mekubetzes, even amongst the Rishonim, are bothered by this. Why not just give the following answer? Min HaTorah, it's a Shechita Re'uya. But once the Rabbanon generated an Iser of Maisa Shabbos, and they said, you're not allowed to eat from this Shechita, then the Shechita turns out to be a Shechita Sheina Re'uya Mid Rabbanon. And maybe that itself should be enough to alleviate him of paying for Dal Vehei. So the Shita Mekubetzes answers that when Chazal made a gzera that a person shouldn't eat from Shechita on Shabbos, they did it lahachmir olav, lo lahakilav. They wanted to make it more harsh, and therefore he shouldn't think that he's going to benefit from a Shechita on Shabbos. But they're not going to be makil and say that as a result it becomes a Shechita Sheina Re'uya, and therefore he's potter from Dalet V'hei. So the Gemara reinterprets now the Shita of the Chachamim. And the Gemara says, Kiko Patri Rabbanan Asha'ara, that when the Rabbanan said that he's Potter for Dal Vehe, it wasn't a reference to the case of Shabbos. On Shabbos Enochinami, he would be Chayim. But rather, it was a reference to Avodah Zara. And we'll see about the case of Shar Niskal in a little bit. So now the Gemara goes back to the Braisa and wonders about this case of Avodas Kochavim, which according to Rabbi Meir, if he shechts Avodas Kochavim, this kind of, he will pay Dalet Vehei. So the Gemara asks the following question, Tovech Avodas Kochavim, why should it be Chayv according to Rabbi Meir Dalet Vehei? Kevon Sheshochat Bapurta. Now this Kevon Sheshochat Bapurta is based on a sugya in Masech Techulim, which Rashi makes reference to on Daf Mem. And the Gemara establishes in Masech Techulin that all you have to do in order to incur a violation of Avodah Zarah is begin the Shechita. That's called in our Gemara, Kevon Sheshochat Bapurta, a small amount. He began the Shechita. Of course, Shechita requires that he shechs two simanim. He only shechted now the first siman, and not even the first siman, but only half of the first siman, and that's called purta. And the Gemara establishes that that's enough to generate the Isra of Avodah Zarah, and therefore it's our lay. So if we freeze this frame of time, this one split second in which he started the shechita and shochet be purta, so he shechted half of the first siman, it's already asur b'hanah midin Avodah Zarah. And the Gemara now asks the following, at what point is the Ganav, according to Rabbi Meir, going to incur a Chiv Dal Vehe? For that we need a complete Shechita. The Idach, Ki Katavach, when he gets to Shechting the second Simon, because as we said before, you're only Chayav Dal Vehe when you have a Shechita, which the Halacha would validate as a Shechita, and recognize as a Shechita, be Mata the Basa. Well, that's not the Tchilas HaShechita. If let's say a Shochet would shecht half a Simon, or even the entire first Simon, but he never shechted the second Simon, it would not be Mati the boss of Midei Nevela, it would be Nevela. Hence there would be no Chiv Dal Vehei. So now the Gemara asks a Mamanistic question. The Gemara is asking, based on all the ritual laws of Yeredeya and Shechita and Masech Techulin, now we swing back to the laws of Choshen Mishpat. What happens in Choshen Mishpat once the animal and its basar becomes asav hanah? The Gemara says, lav demari katavach. The owner of the animal no longer has monetary possession over the basar. Why? Because we have a principle, the isuri hanah eno mamon. And the source for this principle, that isuri hanah, once something is prohibited from any benefit, it becomes hefker, so to speak, meaning it's out of your possession, is actually the case that we're going to discuss in just a few minutes of Shar Niskal. Because once the Shar has been condemned to death, that's called Gemar Din, it becomes Aser Banah, that's the Din derived from Pasuk Uvala Shar Naki, and it no longer belongs to the owner. Because Isuri HaNoah Eino Mamer, the Mishnah, the Braisa says, Macharo Eino Machur, if he sells it, it's not a valid sale. And therefore, if somebody steals it, he's not considered having stolen anything because there's no ownership. So there's no ownership on Isuri HaNoah. So the Gemara asks the following. At what moment in time is it Asur HaNoah that's Betchilas HaShechita? At what moment does the Shechita complete itself to generate a Chiv Dal Vehe? That's the end of the Shechita. Well, by the time he gets to the end of the Shechita, guess what? The animal is no longer owned by the Bailiff. Lav de Marikatov. He's not shechting something that belongs to the owner. Why? Because once it's Asav HaNoah, the owner no longer has monetary ownership over the object, which is Asav HaNoah. Another example of that would be Chametz BePesach. For example, the Gemara says that you could be Mavatel your Chametz before Shas Yisroel, but not on Pesach itself. Because on Pesach it's already Asav HaNoah, it's not yours. Again, that makes sense if you assume that Bittel equals Hefker, it's a monetary thing. That's Shita Satosus. In any event, the Gemara is stuck over here. Why are you Chayef Edal Vehe, according to Rabbi Meir, in the case of Shochet Lavodazara, it's by the time he gets to the main part of the Shechita, which is the complete Shechita, it's already Asur Mana, and therefore Lav Demari Katav. So the Rishonim here are not happy with this Gemara. Im Kain, Eich Mischayev Odo Be'arba V'chamisha. He says the following. There's a halacha in Hilchas Gneva, which is called Shinui Kone. If the ganav makes a change, a serious alteration of the object itself, then the ganav acquires ownership on it. So for example, let's say the ganav stole a shor. He began his shechita. The moment he starts the beginning of the shechita, the animal is already his. He's kone b'shinui. And therefore, when he completes the shechita, how could he be chayav for gneivah aveda? Basically, what the Rishonim point out is our sugi seems to undermine the whole parasha of shechita with regard to dal vehe. Why? Because if you're going to split shechita up into its component parts, then what's going to happen is we're always going to say that by the time he gets to sof shechita, it's lav demari katavach. Why is it lav demari katavach? It has nothing to do with avodah zara and isuri anah. Forget about isuri anah. It has to do with the halacha of shinui kone. And the Rashba, based on this kasha, in terms of asugi, comes to a very sensational conclusion. And he says that siman echad, one siman, is not considered a shinui. Why? Because since this is not considered a full-fledged shechita, it's not a shinui. And again, a lot of Rishonim are going to have problems with this, because once the animal has, obviously, if one of the two simonim are severed, there's no way the animal could live. It can't survive. Can't survive without one of the two simonim. So why would that not be a shinui? That's a pretty radical change in the animal when you convert it from a live animal to a dead animal. In any event, that's the Rashba Shita, that, as we said, there's no Shinui Kone until Sof Shechita. However, there's more to discuss here, and this is in Rabbi Elchanan Wasserman, in the Kovetz Shiurim. I don't know if you've heard of Rabbi Elchanan. He was one of the greats in the last generation who was never, he was murdered by the Nazis. In any event, Rabbi Elchanan is bothered by the following thing. He says the following. The Gemara tells us here on Daf Lamed Aleph that Isurei Hanah Eino Mama, that once you generate an Isur Hanah in something, the ownership is completely gone. And therefore it's not called Lachem. So Rabbi Elchanan quotes a Gemara Sukkah where the Torah says in regard to the Dalet Minim Ulekachtem Lachem, that it's got to be yours. What happens if the esrog or the lulav was asur b'hana? So the Gemara says there, at least according to some Rishonim, we'll see others disagree, that he cannot be yotze his mitzvah lekachtem lachem with an esrog that's asur b'hana. And the reason for that is it's not called lachem. However, there's another sheet of the Rishonim, which is the sheet of the Ritva, that even if the esrog becomes asur b'hana, it's still considered lachem. It's still considered private ownership. So how do we understand the sheet of the Ritva and other Rishonim there in Sukkah? And in the light of HaGemara, how do we reconcile the fact that the Ritva assumes that you could be yotze with an esrog shal isurei hanah on Sukkot, because it's considered lachem, and our Gemara says that once Avodah Zarah becomes cherem, it becomes also about, no, it's not lachem, hence the ganav is not in violation of Shechita that would generate what we call tal vehe. So Rabbi Elchanan quotes a Nesivus. Again, if you're interested in the history, the Nesivus lived almost two centuries ago. And he was one of the great geniuses of all time as far as the Ashkenazic tradition of halacha. And he writes the following, that we should understand the Isurei Hanah as Yeush. Yeush is a case where somebody lost something and he gave up hope of finding it. And the sugya in Bava Metzia establishes with regard to Yeush that Yeush still is owned by the owner until someone else picks it up. It's only when someone else is zocha in it then we remove the bailus of the owner. Is that at all familiar to you? This is a very famous nesivus about yeish. Yeish is not the same as hefker. Hefker means something is ownerless the moment you make it hefker. But in the case of yeish, you never made it hefker. There was no adas makna to give it over to someone else. But rather, this what you call a siluk, which means that he removes his ability to stop someone else from acquiring ownership over it. And the nesivus is going to help us shed a new light on our Gemara. In the case of Dalet Vehei, the principle is the following. When are you chayav for Dalet Vehei? That's only if you shecht something that you have total ownership over. And total ownership, complete ownership, is going to be measured by the fact that no one could take it out of your reshus. The Gemara says that once you shecht one siman l'shem avodah zarah, it becomes also banah, even though it's like yeish, which means it hasn't yet left the ownership of the bailim. Nevertheless, there's a kind of a yeish halacha, meaning the bailim don't expect to get any benefit from it, and that allows anyone else to be zocha. Once his bailus is incomplete, in the sense that he removes his ownership to the extent that anyone else could acquire ownership on it, then we say that b'gmara shchita, when he completes the shchita, that's not considered v'tovcho omacharo as far as dal v'hei is concerned. You cannot say that the iser gneva continues with the tficha. You know, it culminates with the tficha to generate a chiv of dal v'hei, and that's because he doesn't have complete ownership of it, because it's like an aveda liachar yeish. Anyone can come along and take it. Again, you see the equation to yeish. It's just like when a person gives up hope on something because it's lost, and it's in, you know, it's never land. They'll never get it back. That already is mafkia. It removes part of his ownership to the extent that someone else could pick it up, and he's zokim in a yeish. So too, in the case of Isuri Anah, once a person realizes that in an irreversible way he's not going to be able to get any Anah from it, it's Avodah Zarah, and it will remain Avodah Zarah, he's already Misyayish, which means he's Misalik himself, he removes his ownership to the extent that someone else can be Zocha. But again, until that person is Zocha, technically he still owns it. As far as Shechita is concerned, to generate a Chiv Dal Vehei, we need what's called Be'isur. Be'isur means it's got to be a continuation of the original Gneva. And that it is not, because it's already, you know, in a quasi sense, it's already not his. But as far as technical ownership, which is called Shalom, hence the Ritva says, if you have an Esrog that's also by no, you could be Yotze on the first day of Pesach, of Sukkot, it's called what? Ulekachtem Lachem. Because until someone else picks up this Esrog, it still is technically yours. It's not yours as far as the Isa Gneva is concerned to generate a Chiv Dal Vehei for Shechita, but it's yours as far as Lekachtem Lachem, technical ownership. So for those of you who are interested in the Briske Derech, this is like a classic. Rebbe Chana was very much influenced by Reb Chaim, and this is like a Tzvei Dinim, what we call it, you know, two dimensions. In other words, if you're defining Bailus, you can have one set of criteria, one definition that applies to Tvicha for Dal Vehei, and another definition of Bailus that applies to Lekachtem Lachem. And again, that forces us to sort of iron out all the nuances here. So that's what I wanted to share with you here to start the new week with Rebbe Elkanah. Now, the next answer, the next line of the Gemara, which is Rava's answer, perplexes me to no end. Maybe you'll help me out with this, Rav Osai. Omar Rava. Rava wants to know, how could it be that Rabbi Meir says that if you started the Shechita L'Shem Avodah Zarah, the Ganav is going to be Chayav Dal Vehei when he finishes the Shechita? After all, Lav Demari Katavach, the right, there's not full ownership, as we said, after the Tchilas HaShechita, because that's enough, as Gemara establishes a clue, to generate an Iser Hanav Avodah Zarah. Amar Rava the Omer, he declares, Bigmar Zvicha Hu Ovda. That he made a declaration, just move things around, that it's only when he completes the Shechita, that's when he's serving the idol, when he's serving the deity, you know, the Avodah Zarah. So this declaration will establish that the Tchilas HaShechita, which means when he shechted the first of the two Simonim, he has not yet worshipped Avodah Zarah, hence there's no Iser Hanah. And the Gemara is now assuming, this is the underlying premise which I'm having a lot of trouble with, and if you have any footnotes there that might shed a light on this, I don't have any notes whatsoever in the Masifta, so he really let me down here, that whether that Avodah Zarah is not defined in objective terms. Now let me explain to you what I mean. There are halachas, many halachas, that depend on what's called das, dalet aleph tov. Das is a three-letter word that has a tremendous technical meaning in halacha all over Shas. And whenever something is generated by das, for example, kinyonim, then das depends upon the intention and the declaration of the person. So let's say, for example, a person could be kona something with hagbah. And he makes a statement, I'm not going to be kona with hagbah, I'm going to be kona with mashicha. No, it's only when I take it into my rishus will I acquire ownership. That's called das. And that means that you have control over determining whether you're kona or not. Nobody can force a kinyan down your throat. There are other cases where the Torah says, I don't need das, all I need is a maisa, an action. Like, for example, very strange gemara in Yevamos, a man who's a yavam falls off a roof, strange case, and he ends up with a be'ila, a relationship with his yavama. And the Gemara says that he's kona. And not only that, the Gemara says in chalitza, which is the flip side of yibum, if he makes a declaration that with this chalitza, I want to be kona you as an eishes ish, the chalitza is valid, and she now is muteres l'shuk. Meaning that in the case where the Torah says it's not dependent upon das, it's dependent upon the objective maisa. If he did a maisa pe'ila in the case of yamam, or a maisa chalitza, also in the case of yamam, then the Torah takes over at this point. All his conditions and all his intentions are totally irrelevant because there's no din of das here, there's only din of a maisa. As long as you did the action, that's enough. The Torah then defines and establishes what the results of the action is. I would think that in the case of Avodah Zarah, it's not a luck of das. This is not a luck of, I'm making a kinyan on something, I'm acquiring ownership, I'm marrying a woman, I'm divorcing a woman, any of that sort. There's no din of das here. If it's a maisa that's defined objectively as Avodah Zarah, as we said, the Gemara Chulin establishes that the Avodah, meaning the service of this idol, is effectuated with the Simon Rishon, what good is his declaration? Is there a luck of das here that sets up the Avodah Zarah? So again, I'm wrong and the Gemara is right. Obviously, you know, you can't beat the Gemara. That does the rules of the game. But honestly, I'm not so comfortable with this Gemara that his declaration that the Avodah should be achieved only when he finishes the second Simon. And again, he's working against his own interest here because he does finish the Avodah, he does finish the Shechita. And now Rabbi Meir says that it wasn't Asur Ma'anor before he got to the end of the Shechita, the second Siman, and therefore he's going to have to pay down the hay. But okay, that's not my point. But he made a declaration, I am serving this idol with the Sof Shechita.
So, but the question is, of the four things that are Ovid Avodah Zarah, you know, in the Mises, what's the actual, when is that Mises? Maybe that's the definition. What's the definition of the Mises?
So that's what we said before you came in, Asher, that the Gemara has a whole sugyan chulin, that the Mises Shechita, as far as Avodah Zarah, it's a separate halacha of Avodah Zarah, is achieved with Siman Rishon. And that's called an Avodah. And that's the premise of this whole sugya that we're learning here in Masechta Ksuvos. Well, the Rashi says you can't learn this sugya without learning the Gemara Chulin.
But what if the specific maisa of worship of this idol is only the?
Good, then you'd be 100% right, Eric. If the Gemara would have said the following, Hocha Mayaskina de Avodasa Bekat Besov Shchita, but instead the Gemara says Be Omer Besov Shchita Ani Ovda. You know, that's kind of funny that his declaration is going to change the Maisa Avodah Zarah. You know, Maisa Avodah Zarah is not totally bedas. You know, again, he has to have kavanah to worship an idol. That I'm not saying, but. All right, just pointing out the. If you have anything, maybe somebody, Rabbi Schneidzahl says something on this. You know. I'm desperate here, you know what I'm saying? All right. Now Rabbi also was starting a.
Unless it means you, even though in Hulin that's the. That in you can have das to change your.
Yeah, I would say the following, Eric.
What would the implication of that be?
This has something to do with what's called misasik. Are you familiar with misasik?
Yeah.
Misasik means, let's say I throw a knife. Right. And I don't even know there's an animal there, and then lo and behold, magically it checks the animal. So that's called misasik.
Yeah, right.
Or for example, in Netilas Yadayim, you could have misasik in shofar. You know, you're cleaning out the shofar, and a tekiah comes out. These are all cases of misasik. Now, it could be that what the Gemara is saying here in Rava is a big chiddush. I'm not telling you that this is pshat, but I'm saying that maybe when he decides that he's not serving the idol until he finishes the shechita, he becomes a misasik. What's the chiddush of misasik? The chiddush of misasik is that it takes away the maisa from you. It severs the relationship between you and the action.
You don't have to have put on it.
Yeah, it's such an extreme misasik where you're not even... Again, classic misasik means you're not even aware of the action. You know, you're sleeping and you roll over and you break something in your sleep. You're not even aware of what you're doing. You have no consciousness whatsoever. Here, it's a little more complicated to call it misasik, but again, that's my only option here, to be mafkir the shame maisa.
You have your next article now.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah. Okay. The question is, who's willing to publish the next article? Today, you know, everybody publishes their own stuff, because just press a button on the computer and the Word document you have is... Anyway. So I will say, at this point, we're going to really be starting a new sugya. It's not a new sugya in the sense that we're still holding in the brisa of Rav Meir and the Chachamim. Let's go back to the brisa itself, back on Daf Lamed Gimel Amud Beis, and the brisa said the following: that where's the brisa? Here it is. Vasanya on Daf Lamed Gimel Amud Beis, Ganav v'tovach b'Shabbos. Ganav v'tovach l'avodas kochavim, and all that we understood, we worked very hard. Machlokas Rabbi Meir and Chachamim. Let's just review very quickly. According to Rabbi Yochanan, this price is talking about a case where Reuven stole the animal, and he appointed Shimon as his shliach to shech the animal, and Shimon will incur a chiyuv misa in the case of Shabbos, in the case of avodas kochavim. The machlokas between Rabbi Meir and Chachamim is whether or not Reuven, the ganav, through the principle of shluchos shalom kemoso, would incur a chiyuv dal vehe. And we came to the conclusion that Rabbi Meir would hold that he's chayav for dal vehe through the parash of shlichus, and we're talking about a case where he declared that it's he's not worshipping this idol until the Sof Shechita. The Chachamim hold that he's part of Dalet Vehei, and the only case that the Chacham would agree that he's Chayiv Dalet Vehei is the case of Shabbos, because it's a Shechita Ru'uya, if we hold that Rabbi Yochanan Sandler is only the Rabbana. But now we get to the part of the Braisa which we haven't even, we just read it perfunctorily. Ganav Shor HaNiskal Utvacha. The man steals a shor haniskal. Now let's assume that a shor haniskal means two conditions have been met. Number one, unfortunately the shor killed a person. Number two, there was already a gemar din. And that, by the way, requires a judgment of 23 judges. It's a dinei nefashos case, even though we're only dealing with an animal. Now, the ganav, after the shor was proclaimed through the Gemar Din as Shor HaNiskal, he shechted the animal. Well, this is going to be a major problem, because the paradigm case that Isurei HaNoin Omamon is the case of Shor HaNiskal. And as far as Ganeva is concerned, once the object is Osur Ba'Noah, he can no longer continue his Ganeva and incur a Chiyuv Dal Vehei, which means the Rebbe Meir Shita here is going to be very difficult. And that's exactly what our Gemara is going to ask. So we're up to Shor HaNiskal, which you'll see. Let's count up from the bottom of the Omud on page Lamed Daled. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 lines up from the bottom of the Omud. Frekta Gemara, I don't understand. Shor HaNiskal, lav di dehu de katovach. How could Rabbi Meir possibly say that he pays dal vehe? He's not shechting his own animal. He's not continuing the gneva, because if the animal has already been proclaimed a shor haniskal, it's osur ba'noah, and therefore the owner of the animal has no ownership. Again, we refine that, if you remember, but he doesn't have full-fledged ownership. Okay. Now we get to Rabba. Are you ready for this? I mean, again, you gotta fasten your seatbelts because there's so many nuances of this statement of Rabba. Hacha b'mayaskinon, what's the case? Shemisaro l'shomer. Now, it doesn't say exactly what kind of shomer it was, but let's assume, even in the case of a shomer chinam, who's not being paid to watch the object, if he leaves the door unlocked, let's say the animal is in a pen and he doesn't lock the door, if the animal gets loose, then the shomer is liable for that. Now, if the animal gets loose, two things could possibly happen, and maybe even both of them at the same time. One is that the animal is lost. And unless the shomer could retrieve the animal and return it to its owner, he'll be chayav to pay for the animal. The animal's worth 500. That's a lot of money for the shomer to pay. He didn't watch it carefully. The animal went loose. That's number one. So the shomer desperately has to get the animal back. Number two, this animal not only went free, but it also did damage. And we're going to see that what happens now is that if this animal does damage, then it's quite possible that the shor, who's considered responsible for the shor to pay damages, it's the shomer himself. So the shomer is in like a tarti l'reisa, you know, it's double, two strikes against him. Number one, he has to worry about getting the shor back in order to return it to its owners. Otherwise, he has to pay the value of the shor. And number two, as long as the shor has not been returned, the shomer still remains responsible. It's considered, the halacha considers it what's called bebe shomer. Bebe shomer means not physically that it's in the house of the shomer, but it's in the surveillance. It's under the supervision of the shomer. And whoever has an obligation in dini momentus, in monetary law, to supervise something, he's going to be responsible for nizikin. Now, what happens if this shor goes free as a result of the pshia of the shomer, and not only does it damage, but it does the paramount damage, and that is to kill somebody? And that's going to be the case that Rabba imagines over here. What happens is, Masar l'shomer, the bailim passed on to the shomer an animal, v'hizik, the shor, while it was under beis shomer, while it was under the supervision of the shomer, he hasn't yet returned the animal, it went out and it killed a human being. So we schlepped the shor to Bezdin, and there was a Bezdin of 23 judges, and they condemned the shor to die. That's called Nigmar Dino. The beis shomer, again, it's all before the shomer got the physical possession over the shor in order to return. So therefore, he now has responsibility for a shor, which became a shor niska. Now, during this period of time, gnavo ganov mi beis shomer, while the animal is still under the supervision of the shomer, meaning he hasn't yet fulfilled his obligation of hashavas hapikadon, to return the object, it was stolen.
No, it could be stolen on the street.
Correct.
Okay.
So now the question is, let's say the ganov would now shech the animal. The animal is a shara niskal, correct? So that means it's also b'hanoah. Intuitively, we would have assumed that in such a case, the ganav doesn't pay dalet v'heh for Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says, according to this interpretation of Rabba, that he does pay dalet v'heh. Why? Again, we're going to have to combine two tanoim, two shitas in the tanoim. Number one, savala ki Rabbi Yaakov, and number two, savala ki Rabbi Shimon. And now the Gemara is going to go through these two tanoim and their breakthrough shitas. Both are pretty radical shittas. The first is Rabbi Yaakov. Okay. Now, in order to understand Rabbi Yaakov, we have to introduce a halachic principle, which is called Harei Shalcha Lefanecha. So for those who like to write things down, this is really kedai. because this is a Shas kind of concept, and it doesn't appear here in the Gemara, so you might want to write it down.
Could you spell that?
Hare, hey, resh yud, shelcha, lifanecha. Hare shelcha lifanecha means something wild. It's Rav Yaakov's kind of crazy idea that if I have responsibility to you, I can say to you, Hare shelcha lifanecha. Take the object. This is exactly the object that I owe you, and run with it. For example, a ganav steals someone's bread, and then Pesach passes. Now, after Pesach, the chametz is called chametz she'avalav haPesach. It's osur b'anah. So Rabbi Yaakov says that the ganav, in this case, could say Hareshel Chol Fanecha. This is the object that I stole. This is a loaf of bread, right? It says Arnold's Bakery on it, and I'm returning it to you. It's worthless for you. It doesn't matter. Hareshel Chol Fanecha. The Chiyuv Hashava. When any, and again, I gave you a case of a ganav, but it works not only just in Gneva, but in any case where I owe you an object. Let's say, for example, a shomer. A shomer has to return the object. If he doesn't return the object, then he's chayav, he has to pay for it. What if the shomer returns the object and now it's worthless? Says Rabbi Yaakov, the shomer has a right to activate this principle of Hareshel Chol Fanecha and say, look, this is the animal that I stole from you, or not exactly stole from you, but it's close to stealing from you, because the shomer is like a ganav in the sense that if he doesn't return it, it's like he stole it. Here it is. Take it and run with it. The Omar, this is Rabbi Yaakov's principle, af mishen nigbar dino, even though the shor now is worthless to its owner, hichziro shomer lebailo of muchzor. If the shomer returns the object intact, you know, it's not damaged or anything, it's in great shape, then muchzor, he has fulfilled his chiyuv hashava, hence he's potter from tashlumin.
If it's physically okay.
If it's physically okay.
Because financially, it's dead.
Exactly. So we now have a distinction between the be'en and the shavis. The be'en means the physical object, and the shavis is what it's worth. The shomer is returning to the mafkid something that's worthless. He received from the mafkid something that was worth 500. He's giving him something that's worth zippo. But on the other hand, on a be'en level, in terms of the physicality, he can apply the principle of Hareshel Chol Fanecha. You gave me a shor, I'm giving you back a shor. That's it. Okay, so that's fine. But what does that have to do with the ganav? Meaning,
it has to be the same shor. Like he couldn't go get somebody else's shor valueless.
No, it's the same shor. But now we have to ask a different discussion. That's what we're going to introduce Rav Shimon. So far, we got to halfway there with Rav Yaakov. Why is the ganav chayev in this case? When he stole the object, it was worthless. And if it's worthless, you can't make him pay. And moreover, a bear says that if he shefts it, he's going to pay dalvei. How is that possible? After all, there's no ownership over the shor. It's a shor and niska. And here's where you introduce Rabbi Shimon. And this is a very profound tana. I mean, it appears all over Shas. Savalak Rabbi Shimon di omer dover agorim lemomon kimomon dami. Okay, let's talk about what's called neder unidov. Again, you should jot this down if you like to write notes. What's the difference between a neder and a dov? This is really the yisodas of all of kachim. When a person takes upon himself to designate an animal for hegdish, for the mizbeach, then he can do so in one of two ways. He can either say harei zu, meaning this animal is designated for the mizbeach. Or he could say Hareo Lai. Hareo Lai means he takes upon himself a nedava that he will bring a carbon. The difference can be the following. In Harei Zu, when he points to Elsie the cow, if she dies, for whatever reason, you know, Malmovis takes away the animal, then the noder is potter. He doesn't have to replace it with another animal. Because his neder was totally exhausting, focused on this animal. But if he says Hareo Lai, this is what the Reb Chaim would call a Chovas Gavra, meaning he takes upon himself to bring an animal. Well, if he designates one animal and it gets lost or it dies, then he's got to replace it with another animal because he still hasn't fulfilled his nedava to bring the animal. Oh. Now, what happens if a person takes upon himself a nedava, and he says, "I ray alai," then he designates this Elsie for his nedava, and once he designates it, it's called hegdesh. Somebody comes along and steals the animal. If somebody steals the animal, you and I would have said, well, he doesn't have chiyuv gneiva, because the animal doesn't really belong to its owner at the very moment he was magdish. It comes over of Shimon with a new principle, which is called Dovra Gorim Lamom and Kimom and Dami. He does have ownership over the animal. Because what happens if the Ganav takes the animal and doesn't return it? He has to replace it with another animal. So this animal, although it's technically not his, becomes his through a new mechanism, which is called Gorim Lamom. It causes him a loss of mom. In other words, as long as this physical be'en is there, and he has the ability to, in this case, bring it as a karman, then he spares himself the 500 that's going to cost him to replace the karman if he can't get this animal back. So therefore, when the ganav takes it from the nodev, you know, in such a way that now he cannot fulfill his nedava through this animal, hence he has to replace it with another animal, he's going to be out $500. And Chachamim reject this because this undermines the halachic principle of grama. Grama means indirectly I cause you a loss. Usually in the Zikin, monetary law, I have to directly cause you a loss. Here, I'm indirectly causing a loss because if you don't have the access to this animal, you're going to have to replace it with another animal. And that's the breakthrough of Rabbi Shimon. Now let's add 1 plus 1 equals 2. We're going to take Rabbi Yaakov, and we're going to piggyback Rabbi Shimon on top of Rabbi Yaakov. And we're going to end up with a new understanding. This is Rabbi's understanding of Rabbi Meir and the Braisa, why the Ganav who shechts the Shor Niskal is going to pay Dal Vehed. The answer is that the Ganav is actually stealing something. Why is he stealing something? After all, if it's a Shor Niskal, it's also Matnah. And we never have Chiyuve Gneva on something that's also Vanah. The answer is because we're talking about a Shomer. And in the case of a Shomer, if he doesn't have access to this physical animal, if somebody takes it away from him, that becomes a Dora Gorim Lamom. Why? Because of Rabbi Yaakov's principle called Hareshal Cholifanecha, meaning that as long as the Shomer has the physical animal, it's worth nothing. Zippo. But yet, for him, it's worth 500, because if he can't return that animal, and he was a poshe and a shmira, he's going to have to replace that animal and sign a check of 500. Now the ganav has made it impossible for him to get access to the animal to return it and activate the principle of Rachel Chol Fanecha. So now we're going to activate the principle of Rabbi Shimon, Dovra Gorim Lamom Kabbalah. Because if the shomer doesn't have access to the shar, he's going to have to pay out of pocket to the bailim, to the mafkid. And as a result, this ganav was goring him a loss. So again, in classic Hilchas Dini Mominos, in terms of what constitutes bailus, there's no bailus on a Shor Niskal. It's Osur Banon. And as far as Gneva is concerned, you're not stealing something that the person owns. It's not Shalom. Let's forget about the Ritva, about Shalochem for a minute, so we don't confuse ourselves, right? So it's not yours. It's Isri Anon. But there's a new halacha of bailus, a brand new category of bailus, that if this physical object, even if it's not yours, represents money for you, meaning it will save you from a payment, then it's considered your money, such that Rabbi Shimon says that if somebody steals it, he has to pay for it. Hence, in the case of the Shomer, Rabbi Meir holds that you pay Dalit Vehei for the Shechita. Now, what are the Chachamim hold? There are many ways of interpreting the Chachamim who disagree with Rabbi Meir in this price, and you don't pay Dalit Vehei. Number one, they may reject Rabbi Yaakov, and they don't hold from Arishal Chol Fanecha. More likely, they reject Rabbi Shimon of Dovra Gorim Lamom and Kimom and Tamim. They would say, look, it's true that the Shomer is going to have to pay out of pocket, but nevertheless, the Ganav is not stealing something that's his. And this new quasi-ownership, this new category breakthrough called Dovra Gorim Lamom and Mamon, we never accept that. That's not called Mamon, because that's only a grum situation. Now, we don't have that much time left, but I would like to at least give you an introduction to another statement of Rabba, the same Rabba that we learned until now. And what the Gemara is going to try to do is, the Gemara is going to try to see if in the light of Rabba, we can now assume that the Ganav was the shochet. In other words, up until this point, we're at a crossroads in the sugya. We've assumed that the braisa separated between the ganav and the toveach, and the ganav had appointed the toveach as his agent. So Rava Amar li olam b'toveach al yidei atzmo. I can circumvent that whole ukimta, you know, that forced us into a corner, and I can assume that it was the ganav himself who shechted the animal. And at this point, we're going to turn to Daf Lamed Daled Amud Beis, which makes me very excited, and because I always like to turn the page. And Rabbi Meir holds Loke Umeshalim Islay Mes Umeshalim Lesley. Now this Rabba is making a radical chiddush, and he's saying the following: that although we know that in the case of Malkos, Rabbi Meir, and this was Rabbi Meir by Adam Zonim, let's not forget, said that we can impose not only a Chiv Malkus, but also a Chiv Tashlumin, and both will coexist. In other words, we're not going to apply the principle of Kimlei B'Ramine, neither Ula's Kimlei B'Ramine nor Rabbi Yochanan's Kimlei B'Ramine, if you remember. Ula said that you pay money and you don't get Malkus, and Rabbi Yochanan says you get Malkus and you don't pay Mama. And now Rabbi Meir says, no, you get both. You get Loka Mishalim. That part is not so radical. But listen to the next line. But Mesu Mishalim Lesley. In other words, there's no way of imposing, even according to Rabbi Meir, a double penalty in the case of Chiyuv Tashlumin and Chiyuv Misa. Here, Rabbi Meir agrees and adopts the position of Kim Levi the Rabbi Mine. And therefore, Shani Hani, the Chidushu Chetshitra Torah V'Knas, the Afgav the Mikta Mishalim, that the case of Dalet Vehe is the only exception to the rule of Kim Levi the Rabbi Mine. Again, Rabbi Meir accepts Kim Levi Rabbi in the case of what?
Mita.
Misa, right, Mita. Mita Mishalim Lesa. You don't get both Mita Mishalim. The exception to the rule is going to be Toveach, meaning a Ganav who pays Dalet Vehe. Why? Because there's no logical reason why you should pay Dalet Vehe. Logic would mandate that you compensate a person for his loss. Here he's getting a 400% profit on the deal. That's a good deal. And that's a chidush chidush Torah v'knas. The Torah says, you know what? This ganav violated an isur. Not only did he steal it, he even shechted it. We're going to slap him with a knas. He's going to have to pay a penalty. And in such a case, we don't apply the universal rules that apply to Tashlumei Mamon. A normal Tashlumei Mamon, which is compensation, which is logical, and the Torah says you have to pay for that. So if he gets a harsher punishment, then, in the case of Misa at least, we apply Kim Levi the Rabbi. But in the case of a Knas, which is a new Chiddush, it doesn't beat to the same tune, it doesn't dance to the same music. It has its own rules and regulations. The Shita Megubetzis calls it Gzeiras HaMelech. It's the decree of the divine king. And in such a case, because it's a Gzeiras Melech, it is a punishment that has to be meted out. And therefore, Rabbi Meir holds Afal Gavta Miktal, even though we're going to kill him, he's going to be condemned to death because of violating the Shabbos, violating Avodah Zarah. Nevertheless, he still has to pay. He has to pay the knas, and if he dies before he pays the knas, then we'll collect the knas from his heirs, from his yorishim. So, Belinet, tomorrow we're going to study. We're going to have to look at a Gemara that's a little bit later on in order to appreciate our Gemara, and we're going to talk about the knas of onus umefata that we started with. We should never lose sight of the forest, for the trees, and we're going to talk about knas. We're going to have a Mishnah that says Rabbi Meir agrees that Baal Bito, if a man never rapes his own daughter, then he has to, he doesn't pay knas because he's chayav misa. So we're going to have to come to some conclusion that there's a difference between the knas of onus umefata that we're dealing with in our perek and the knas of dal vehe. In the case of dal vehe, Rabbi Meir applies the principle of chidushu shechidush Torah v'knas v'yafgav de mikdal mishalim. So even though he's going to be put to death, he still has to pay the knas of dalet vehe in the case of ganov tamach u'machar. Masha'en kein, in contrast, in the case of ones a man who's chayv misa, like the Mishnah we're going to see later on, adaf lamed hey lamed vav, of baal bito, he is exempt from paying the knas, and we're going to apply the principle of kimlev the ramine, and that even according to Rabbi Meir, and that's going to be our subject. But we need it tomorrow to try to work out the differences between the two. So let me take this opportunity to wish everyone a great day and a great week.
Okay.
And Shavuot Tov.